This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes. This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, my lovely co-host Sarah Hartley, and Rick Kelsey. And today we're going to talk about why a marathon is 26.2 miles, although based on our previous levels of research, maybe don't trust this.
I just can't believe. Yeah, you just didn't do that intro with insulting us. I'm a bit lost.
I've been on holiday. I'm feeling mellow. I'm relaxed. Yeah. Maybe I'm just saving it until later in the podcast.
You look like you're healing well.
Thanks. I'm saving it up.
Well, I'm excited. Let's dive in.
We're talking about marathons and why they're 26.2 miles. Mm. You've got one coming up, Sarah.
Oh, so guys, as each day goes on, the paranoia gets worse and worse and worse. And can I tell you what's not good marathon preparation 2 weeks before?
I feel like you're going to tell us anyway.
Going to watch people take on a marathon. Last weekend, I went to go watch Brighton Marathon.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, it was brilliant. Like, just lovely. Everyone was amazing. But I watched my mates at miles 4, 7, 13, 18, 23 in the finish.
God, that's a transformation. That's a lot of effort.
Yeah, and it was all really close together.
right. No, Sarah.
I was going to say, that five spots. That's amazing.
You watched, they're good friends then, I assume.
Yeah.
You've known them quite a long time?
Well, they're closer mates with my boyfriend, but you know, I was there.
But you still supported them at multiple points on the course.
Five points,
Sarah. As opposed to my childhood friend.
I saw you at one point, stumbled towards the end,
that's a bit ridiculous. I mean, that's hard.
It was
work.
Although one thing, if you're listening to this and you're taking on a marathon, or like you're new to running and you have a friend who's more experienced, or maybe you're the more experienced friend. So basically the night before, we all stayed in a house together in Brighton, and one of the guys who was taking on the marathon the next day, first ever marathon, he just turns to me and goes, I haven't run for 2 weeks, because everyone was saying about like winding down. That's right. So my word, don't ask a more experienced person a question like that the day before. Because I was like, what do you want me to say?
You've got to lie.
Was like, that is so much better than if you'd like done loads of hard workouts.
You didn't lie, you just were like, that is true. It's better than if you'd smashed yourself.
Yeah, I was like, that's better than if you'd run a marathon today.
Yes. Well, I'm not going to say who it was, but Sarah and I did a TLC Meets podcast where we meet people with amazing running stories. Mm-hmm. And this person who we spoke with is about to do London, and they'd only got up to 17 miles.
Yeah, but that's good. That's quite good, though.
But I thought you'd go to 20.
Well, it doesn't, I mean...
Time on feet as well. It depends on what you're going for. I think if you're trying to run your fastest and best ever marathon, then you need to have done a longer long run.
But there is so many incredible stories of people taking on London Marathon this year. And actually, I'm really invested in the people who are like trying to do it because they don't think they can. One person was who we spoke to on TLC Meets. Another person is, I don't know if you've seen Millie Pickles on social media. So one of her legs is amputated, and she's really trying to do it to see if she actually can. But a lot of her training has just been working out like what she can use and kind of what helps her feet or like her prosthetic to be able to do it. Yeah. And so she's only gone up to about the half marathon distance. And then a lot of it is just like being prepared that on the day it is going to be really tough.
It's going to work out.
And seeing whether she can do it.
What are you at the moment on your tapering?
So I am Well, so I had a bit of a failed run at the weekend. I tried to go out before everyone was running Brighton. I was like, right, I'm going to get out early, go along the bit of the course that no one will be on, and then come back and cheer.
Yeah.
And it was so windy so hilly that I was supposed to do 22K comfortable, and I got to like 13.
And
I was just like, this is not comfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to stop. So now I'm in a bit of a panic mode, but I think it'll be fine. I've looked at the next 2 weeks of training and I'm like, okay, no, there's still time.
Yeah, I've seen the stuff that you've done. I'm excited for you to do what you've set out to do in London, which is enjoy it, hopefully run fast.
Yeah.
But like, I've seen the training. It's going to be great. And it also it's not possible for it to be as windy as it was at the weekend.
Oh my
London
gosh.
Marsh.
Oh my gosh, weird. Yeah.
We had some family down from the world. Well, my mum came down for a pub crawl.
Were you going to go around all of the Tim Hortons restaurants in London? I drove past one the other day.
Carol Kelsey
came down for a pub crawl.
Yeah.
We went to Park Run, and I...
Did your mum do it?
She walks around at the back.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So... I've always wondered about this question. Can you run it off? You know, when someone says to you, can you run it off?
So I had a hangover.
No. We're talking about like a niggle, a running niggle in your knee. So I had a bit of a niggle a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't any directly osteotomy related, but I think I've run off my niggle.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm not sure if that is actual, there is science behind running it off. What do you reckon?
I think sometimes you can feel phantom pains and niggles and stuff, and they can be non-structural and non-soft tissue, and so there's no real damage there.
Yeah.
And there can be nerve adhesions and all sorts of stuff like that, that if you do actually exercise through a small amount of discomfort, then yeah, you can come out the other side and you've kind of freed stuff off, or you've got more mobility back.
So it's true.
That's
me giving you an on the fence answer to say,
that's
to say I don't
being
believe
like,
in...
You're wrong, but I'm going to give you an example of what...
What do you reckon, Sarah?
Well, I don't... It depends what you class as a niggle. So like throughout this marathon training block, my left hamstring has been the thing that I need to make sure is warmed up before I start a run.
And then do you run it off?
Yeah, well, there has been the occasional run where I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do a few hamstring sweeps, shake my leg around a bit. And then I've got like a 4K warm up. So I know by the end of that, it will feel better. But I just have to take it slow. Whereas like if you're trying to just go like, if you were trying to, for example, beat your park run PB or like go quite fast and you're going to go like, oh, I'll run it off by hammering out a 5K. Don't think that's the way to go.
Not going to work.
No.
Yeah, I think you can tell if it's going to be able to run it off. So one, if it's severe pain, never even try it. But if you are low level out of 10, you know, 2 or 3 out of 10 pain,
you could.
This is not medical advice, but I think you can try it.
Yeah.
And then if it's persistent or getting worse, obviously you should stop. But if it does disappear, then you might have done that. But one of the big niggles I've never been able to run away from is your
Rick.
Presence on this podcast.
But you did get away from Rick for a whole week. How was your holiday? It looked like there was lots of running.
There was. It was like training camp. I'm not sure. Not sure my family were as impressed by me indulging in a training camp. But back in the New Forest, which is my happy place for running, had training camps there in 2008 for the Beijing Olympics, and then London 2012 as well, just for me and my training group.
When you say training camp though, like, can we just do a quick side-by-side comparison of your 2008 Olympic training camp versus last week?
Yeah.
Did you eat kind of similar
to
what you were eating?
Absolutely not.
did you do the same amount of gym sessions as you would have done in 2008?
No. So nothing was... the only.
And then obviously in the afternoons in 2008, you went straight to the playground, right, with you.
Yes, exactly. And took a peloton of kids out in a cycling proficiency around the New Forest.
People on Strava, take a bow for your comments that you've put Andy put up like cycle ride with the kids. And someone commented underneath, surely not all of them.
And then someone said, how big was that peloton, mate?
I did see
a lot of bikes.
I did see a news alert. Good. Bikes clogging up New Forest.
Yeah, exactly. We've eroded.
Attempt cycle ride.
We've been responsible. We've been responsible for a large element of deforestation in the New Forest. Purely for my run. But
your carbon footprint.
I'm going to ignore you all. I love running down there. And we talked about on the most recent podcast how I'm super motivated at the moment.
Yeah.
And so I did do a proper week of pretty hard training with my coaches who we were staying with, his family, or his oldest son. who I might have mentioned this, but back in the day was handing me my water bottles at training camps, and now he's 18. And
did you hand him a water bottle though? Well, that's not really fair.
I mean, I was just trying to keep up and trying to talk. No, he was the perfect. Like we did a park run together, immediately followed by a session as part of the kind of run combo.
Nice.
We did some intervals. We did a fartlek threshold, a long run together.
Your poor family.
I know, yeah.
Hey, we did them all pretty early in the morning. So that's the difference.
Kids under the age of 10 are famous for lying.
They love a lion, yeah. But no, we were back and then it was straight into cycling all days out and stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, it was really nice, thanks. I'm feeling in pretty good shape, excited to take on a 5K. And then dangerously spent too much time chatting to Andy, who's sort of...
obviously he loves egging you on.
He does egg me on. And he's moved the goalpost for me again, where he was sort of, we were looking... He was like, well, if you could run this sort of time for 5K, that would put you in the top X in the country as a V40, like Vets 40 men. And I was like, no, would it? And I looked and I was like, it would, you know? I was like, so I'm not revealing the time.
One
now.
Of the other athletes that he coaches came third, London Landmarks Half Marathon this weekend.
Oh,
it's probably straying into the news. Yeah, Nick Harris-Fry.
Well, and I incredible know for a fact run. That he was doing that at marathon pace. So
was he?
That was, wow. I might have given the game away there. Embargoed. <Yeah.
Sorry.
laughs> but no, I'm pretty sure that was target marathon pace.
Wow.
It feels incredible, like running. At the moment we are just in the middle of marathon season. Like
it's everywhere. Crazy.
There's so much happening. But if you are in the middle of the social media noise of like everyone's taking on amazing things, everyone's smashing it, like just know that it's not everyone. Like the noise that you'll hear the most, if you're like listening to this and you're injured or you're either not racing spring marathon season or you're not training for a marathon, there are loads of people who are just happily running and enjoying it or are coming back from injury, so don't feel like you have to.
And if you're in London next week, then we're opening a shop.
Oh, yes,
yes, we are.
Yeah,
come and see us, mile 27. Come and see us, we would love to have you.
Go on.
Andy loves reeling off the address.
Oh, therunningchannel.com/mile27. You might also get a nice ad during this podcast for that.
You meant the address to the store.
Oh, 15 Bateman Street, Soho.
15 Bateman Street.
It's walking distance from Piccadilly, Tottenham Court Road, Oxford Circus,
and it's
Charing
crawling
Cross.
Distance from the finish line, which is what I shall be doing.
And I'm looking for a big white coat. I want one of those David Jason coats from Open All Hours.
You know when we say it's a shop, it's not...
No, it's a shop.
Well, it is a shop.
We're going to serve stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to sell you off to the highest bidder.
Oh, yeah, I'm on board
and
with
in
that.
In fact, we are about half a mile from the finish, which must put us at 26.7 miles. But I'm doing my best at a broadcast-style segue
but
here.
But we should talk about why is the marathon 26.2 miles?
Oh, thanks.
That means a lot coming from you, Rick. So, Rick...
Yes.
I know you've only briefly glanced over the notes.
Well, yeah, let's quiz Rick.
Why is a marathon 26.2 miles? What would you and probably most people assume is the right answer there?
Is it something to do with ancient Greece and the lap of the track?
Yes, correct. But that is a lie.
Oh,
we
it's
are
a lie.
Myth-busting. Yeah, so a lot of people...
So it sort of is the answer. Is bits of that are true and bits of it aren't. And there's been lots of... fake news over the, you know, thousands of years since the original alleged story in Greece.
Yeah, so the original story in Greece is, also shout out to my printing, which is why me and Andy will be doing this.
Oh, Sarah cannot operate a printer.
I just always print on the short side rather than the long side.
Such
anyway,
a geeky explanation.
So what you might know as the story as to why a marathon is 26.2 miles is there was someone in Greece called Felfidus, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, who was
Feliides. We've got like two different pronunciations here.
Well,
so,
it was so long ago. Yeah. You just don't know.
The research team, James.
But they were sent from Athens to Sparta to ask for aid, which is roughly 150 miles. So that would have meant that marathons would have been 150 miles, which
too long.
I think we can all safely say we don't want to happen. But they were sent from there, asked to get for help, got told essentially, this is our notes, not right now, we're having a festival, so then had to run 150 miles back. And then there's a number of different elaborations that were put on this story that apparently after he ran back, he died. But apparently that isn't true either.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that's been the kind of how that's metamorphosed into the modern story is that it wasn't Athens to Sparta, which we understand is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And people would talk about it, how it was marathon to Athens and that distance was roughly 26 miles. And so that's the story that then got completely evolved from our notes, I think, by Plutarch, who was writing more than half a millennium after the battle and was notorious for potentially being a little bit...
frissy, wishy-washy when it came to the truth.
That's in our notes. So yeah, there's loads of stuff there. That's what I'd always thought it was. I thought it was Athens to Marathon or Marathon to Athens, and then that he had died on delivering this message. Mm. And the alleged message, which I think is interesting anyway in itself, was Nike, Nike, Nineki Kiam, which means victory, victory, rejoice, we conquer. Yeah, rejoice, we conquer. And yes, Nike is like victory.
Ah, see, so. Learning everything. But I think that's why so many people want to know the answer to this, because it is a weird distance.
Yes.
Like even at Brighton at the weekend, people were like, we would go to a mile marker and we were even along the finish straight and people were like, how long actually is this? Because it is weird, like 26.2 miles or
42.195.
Yeah.
So these people were running around Greece a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And then in 1896, mm-hmm. from what I understand,
yeah.
they started having a race between two major cities in Greece, but the distance fluctuated between 24 and 26 miles. But the Greeks thought it was amazing that they were running this race. So every year it got competitive, but it wasn't hammered down in stone, the exact distance, until the London Olympics of 1908.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something that was being held regularly in Greece. It was held in 1896 as the first modern Olympics.
First modern Olympics.
Where they were held in Athens. And so it was created as a nod to that legendary story that it should have been embellished and turned out not to be true. And it was 40K-ish, the distance between Marathon and Athens.
But if you think now, so like it was from 1896 to 1908 that it fluctuated.
Yeah,
so
and if you think about Boston Marathons, what everyone talks about as the oldest marathon, that was 1897. Mm. And so that started at a different distance and course to what it is now.
Which is so funny when you think of like, we always say comparison is the thief of joy, but like people love comparing, not necessarily yourself against someone else, but you love comparing like, oh, I did this marathon and then this time I've like beaten my time a little bit. So being an athlete in 1896 must have been well annoying.
Quite confusing. Your times must have been well.
What did you get at the last Olympics? Well, it was 2 miles shorter.
but
I did run a little bit quicker.
Yeah, I think we've assumed it's always been the standardized distance. And because London Marathon only started in the 80s mm-hmm. and Boston Marathon had been going since 1897. And that first one was 24.5 miles. And it was only in 1924 that it was lengthened to 26 miles, 385 yards to conform to the Olympic standard.
Oh, wow. So they moved to start longer line at point. Because it was finalized. The marathon distance was finalized in 1908 in Windsor, wasn't it? In the UK.
Yes. Well, it started in Windsor.
But Boston took 15 years to make it official. Yeah.
Also, fun fact about the London Olympics in 1908, it was an accident that they were held there because it was supposed to be in Italy, but there were volcanic eruptions, so they couldn't host.
Gosh, you just think that the marathon distance has been around for centuries, but actually, it's only 120 years old.
Yeah, but I do think there's something so special about the marathon distance that, like, if you've ever watched a marathon, it's that proper, like, my mate who ran it, how he ran Brighton the other day, he was just like, it's incredible how 13 miles, you feel fine.
Oh, yeah.
And then, bam, it just hits you. Like, no matter how good you're feeling in that first half of the race, it really, like, it's just long enough that it like really humbles you no matter how strong you're feeling.
Yeah.
But then should we talk about, so we still haven't got to why it's 26.2.
Mm.
Well, and the answer is not particularly definitive, because another myth was that it was all about the royals viewing the start, because it's starting in Windsor Castle, so a royal home. And there was discussion at the time as to whether it was the Princess of Wales, Princess Mary, so that her children could have a good view of the start through the nursery windows. But
myth.
Yeah, we're going to bust that myth. And if I can work out how to flip over Sarah's notes, that printed
sorry
really
with my
weird.
Printing. Yeah. What's so incredible though is like maybe this stuff still happens, but when you think of the Olympics or when you think of like the London Marathon, for example, it feels like it's planned out so far in advance. Yeah. Whereas like this was apparently the route and length were up in the air almost until the week of the race. Imagine if you were signed up to run and you were just like, well, not signed up, you're in the Olympics. Imagine if you're an Olympic marathoner and you don't quite know how long your course is going to be.
Yeah, well, I guess the difference in the amount of information you had, even when I was competing, like there wasn't this encyclopedic wealth of like all of the training that everyone was doing all over the world, or, you know, Strava didn't exist, or like the internet was certainly in my teens and early 20s, you just couldn't find out.
I thought you were talking about 1908.
Well, yeah, that was when Andy Steig competed. Yeah, yeah. When you think about your training now, though, if you could go back and start your career again with everything that you have to access now,
yeah,
would you follow loads of other athletes on Strava, or do you think you wouldn't?
No, I think my. I made loads of mistakes when I was running, but actually I was talking to Andy, my coach, about this last week. My superpower when I was competing is I just didn't care what anyone else was doing. And I was surrounded by other people who they'd be like, oh, so-and-so from this group or so-and-so from America has been doing this kind of workout, or I heard about this on the grapevine.
Yeah.
And the danger of that is that you don't know anything about that person's previous 6 months or 6 weeks of training. Mm. That's a really specific workout for them. And nothing that I ever did in training was stand out. Like, I was training as one of the best runners in the world and with some of the best runners in the world. But I think if people who were good club runners came and watched my training, most of the time they'd probably been like, I could do that, or I could do bits of that. Mm. But the thing is, they wouldn't have been able to do the previous 6 weeks all in a row. Mm. So, but I think that the short answer there is no, I wouldn't look, because that's the danger as an athlete of any level, actually. If you try and mix and match different people's training programs and stuff that's not specific for you, then you don't end up with the best possible result, and you also start to undermine your own confidence.
So have we got an answer yet?
No, sorry. This is how complicated it is. So we're at the London Olympics in 1908. Mm-hmm. We're not quite sure where the start of the race is.
The start's at Windsor Castle, and there were various adjustments in that week leading up to it. And then the finish was at the White City Stadium in London, a stadium that was pretty iconic for athletics over the decades, but doesn't exist anymore. It's now been built on, and I think the home of the BBC was either built on it or very close to it. Yeah, really? That kind of area in sort of West London. And so that was the route between those two places. And then the reason it ended up exactly the distance that it was because of the way that the athletes ran around the track in order to finish.
Because they were supposed to enter what would have been right next to where the Royals were sitting, but then they had to move that because they were concerned that the Royals wouldn't necessarily want to sit there all day, so they wanted to make their exit discreet. So they moved it to the other side of the track, which meant that they then had to run anti-clockwise, I think, around the last little bit of it.
Okay, so there is a Royal connection to it.
Yes, yeah. But it's I think they'd settled on a specific distance, which actually would have made the distance longer than it is today. So it would have made it more like 42.4, just under kilometres.
Great. Imagine anyone finishing a marathon. Maybe you're listening to this right now whilst running a marathon. Imagine running an extra 0.2.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So it said they kind of diverted them around the track from the Royal Box, I think. So it wasn't
pure coincidence set up. It was just how people were sitting. Run from Windsor to White City in West London.
Yeah.
And around the Royal Box, 26.2 miles, done forever, set.
Yeah, I don't think it immediately became set in stone. Like on the day of the 1908 Olympics, this is forevermore shall be the marathon distance. But I think that is now the marathon distance, and it's become standardized over time. But as I said, it took, another more than 10 years for Boston, for example, to take that distance. But from that point, all Olympic marathons, I think, were that same distance to have that comparison.
Well, we've helped a lot of people with their pub quizzes.
Yeah, so if you want to know, when was the marathon distance officially set? 1921, the London Olympic distance was the one chosen.
1921?
Yeah.
Oh. I was thinking you were going to finish with it. 1908.
No, so 1908 was the first time that it was that length, but it still wasn't until 1921.
That it was set.
After the storytelling of the race that meant the 26.2 mile became legendary, and that was Jack Andrew.
So it's only 100 years old. Oh, wait. The set marathon time. Wow. And it was all because of the logistics. Great. Great job. Well done, everybody.
I'm glad we got through that. Hopefully that was useful. If you have any marathon questions, let us know. podcast@therunningchannel.com. But this is The Running Channel Podcast. Up next, we've got your questions to answer, my favourite bit. But first, we've got some news stories. Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at The Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.
So I'm quite confused about this. LA to Las Vegas ultra marathon.
It's speed project time. We just had to mention this incredible race. It's an unsanctioned race. You can do it solo. You can do it solo supported. You can do it solo unsupported. Huge shout out to people who did that, like James Paul, where they literally ran from LA to Las Vegas with nothing but a rucksack on their back.
How
no help.
Far is it, roughly?
Oh, good question. Hundreds I feel of, like it's, yeah, hundreds of kilometres yeah. and miles.
Nothing Three, but
something
a rucksack.
Like 300 miles, 500 kilometres, maybe, yeah. rings a bell.
Right.
But it's so far, and people do it as relays, and the whole thing is like loads of people go and just bash it out so quickly. But you are going through like the desert. It's yeah. so hard. There were some incredible relay teams who did it this year, wow. both who finished within the given time, and also a couple of teams who did it outside of the kind of time limit that they had, but did it for such incredible causes. So well done.
Yeah, and past. You could just do a short relay. So if you're the bit that comes into Vegas, you could just do like the last 100 meters.
Most well, of the
you
people...
could, yeah, but most yeah. people did multiple.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and the really fast teams were like cycling through people every 5 or 10K to yeah. get the moat. So it wasn't like people did hours of legs.
Oh, I see.
But like imagine there was one team where I think they averaged 5 minute kilometers for the whole thing.
Oh my gosh, that's
for
fast.
Like 500 kilometers. Yeah.
The other big story is Hardest Geezer. I mean, this is amazing.
He's made it. He's yeah. run the entire length of Africa.
Yeah, and there's so many bits of this that are bonkers. One, that it was only a few days before that the route got reversed, right? I think he was going to run south. And then yeah. there was visa issues really? That meant he started in South Africa and ran north. And that, imagine just the psychology of Jibber, that.
Yeah.
Then he was... various stories about him being robbed at gunpoint.
Yeah, armed yeah. robbery, and they got everything stolen.
The like British diplomatic service, I think, had to get involved and get him some kind of fast track visa to give him access to Algeria, I think, at yeah. one point. Otherwise, he wasn't even going to be able to finish.
Also, he's had like a number of health scares as well. Of like, he had to stop for a couple of days to get a scan on his back, and like yeah. he
blood
had
and
to
protein
stop.
In his urine as well.
Yeah, had yeah. to stop. It's incredible. Incredible feat of running.
Yeah.
So 10,000 plus miles, yeah. hundreds of thousands of pounds raised for charity.
And I think the most incredible thing is just when I've watched loads of interviews of him, of people like running alongside him for the last kind of few kilometres. Incredibly, actually, someone I went to school with, I think his mates with him and has flown out to like really? Go be there. And I was like, yeah. what a small world. But I think the most incredible thing is when you see the mic being passed over to him, he's just your average guy
yeah.
from like, is it Bournemouth? Where he's from, but like just when he starts talking, I think sometimes you expect people who have created such like incredible feats to kind of be
superhuman,
yeah,
kind or of to super... sound like they're straight out of the SAS or something.
Yeah, yeah, whereas like he just comes across as just such a lovely, relatable kind yeah, of
who
happy,
was his
positive
support
person
team for the year because he's been gone a year.
I don't know. He's had like he's definitely had like a big crew around yeah. him.
I like the way but... people just joined him for the last day, and they were like, "If you want to come and join me for the last day, meet me at the Shell garage." It sounded so normal. Yeah, right. Meet at the Shell garage
in Tunisia.
Let's run the last marathon.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's a big group. That was it. Well, it did look like a real life news footage of Forrest Gump.
Yeah,
when he was finishing, like there yeah. were so many people flocking. It was really cool.
Nuts.
Very, very cool. Right, and now question time.
Okie dokie, Gabriella from New York City.
Hello.
I have a question about running plans and getting sick. I'm currently training for a 10K and plan on training for my first marathon after the 10K race. I was wondering what you do if you get sick for a few days or a week in terms of adjusting your plan. It seems like you can't just skip those days because you're going to be building onto the mileage the next week. So it all kind of totting up afterwards to kind of, you know, scrape it back together. But if you push the training back, you won't finish the plan in time for the race. So do you have to do that if you've missed it, or do you pick back up where you should have been at that point?
I think a concern here is because the marathon's so specific and you are trying to build up to that pinnacle of your longest run and get the confidence that that gives you towards the marathon day itself. But you have to listen to your body. So you can't, and it depends, really depends on how much you miss. So if you miss weeks and weeks, then you're going to have to reassess everything. If you have just missed 1 week or 10 days or something like that, then I wouldn't jump back. So if you've missed, say, weeks 8 and 9 of your plan, I wouldn't jump straight into week 10. I think you do need to go back to where you were and pick back. And remember also, you're going to need 3 or 4 days or a week just to feel normal in your running again.
Yeah.
So to expect to just be ill and then jump straight back in and go bang, training session, intervals, long run, you do just have to give yourself a week to get back into it. And then I'd be working out at the point that I am, say I've got another 5 or 6 weeks until the marathon day or until my long run day, and then just trying to incrementally get to as close as I possibly could to the run I wanted to achieve on that day. So that might mean adjusting the training plan slightly. So if your long runs were going to progress from the point that you're at right up to 20 or just over 20 miles for your longest run, and you still want to get up to 20 miles, then instead of having 6 weeks to do it, where you're going to go, I don't know, 13, 15, 17, 18 miles, then 20 miles, you might just have to go with what you're at, 13, and maybe accept that you're only going to do 18 miles as your longest run, or just add a tiny bit to each of those incremental runs. Yeah. So you go 13, 16, 18, 20 in the 4 weeks that you do have left. But don't try and make a massive leap. And if you're really close to the end,
you've got to adapt it and don't chase it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the marathon as well, definitely make sure you still taper.
Yeah. I got.
Don't squeeze it into those last 10 days thinking, well, I'll not taper. I'll use that to keep building.
Yeah.
You'll pay for it.
I got norovirus 2 days before I did the London Marathon. Not great timing. I'm sure you'll be fine. Anyway.
Oh, Rick.
Anyone listening, just ignore him.
Not going out for dinner with you 2 days.
Hey, listen, got round. Dane from Seven Oaks in Kent. Thank you for getting me through the last 13 weeks of my London Marathon training plan. This will be my first ever marathon at 39. And so far, the body has felt okay through the plan as a regular runner, but not at this distance. Since starting my taper, it feels like my legs are struggling more than ever. Interesting. Is it normal maranoia? I like that.
Maranoia.
Have you heard that before?
Yeah. It's. I think we talked about it.
I literally said it at the start of this podcast.
Did you?
Yeah.
I wasn't listening.
Well, what a surprise.
To feel every ache and pain during the run up to the big day. I must lastly note, however, I am also a psychopath. As when putting on my trainers, I am in fact a sock shoe person.
Okay, sorry Dane, you don't get any advice.
Yes. So what are you gonna say?
Yes, that's it.
No advice more for you. I tell you what, Dane, you know what will make you feel so much better is if you go sock shoe shoe. That'll totally transform your running.
You'll smash it then. No need to worry about it. Serious answer is yes.
Taper.
That's exactly how it feels. It didn't matter whether it was for the marathon or even I used to taper for my big races in my career. And in those 3 or 4 days for me, because it was a very short taper.
Sorry, I know it was a big race. But the fact that you're giving marathon advice and being like, yeah, I used to taper for those 3 minutes I ran.
Yeah, I did that. I had to
tape it down to 20 seconds.
Point was going to be that in those 3 days of tapering and massively reducing my volume and intensity, I felt like I'd never run before in my life. And
it is incredible, isn't it?
I would have done months and months of training at my race pace and loads of workouts that replicated it. So the same for the marathon. Mm-hmm. And I experienced this in my marathon taper as well. And then all of a sudden I would go out and run a 200 meter effort on the track a few days beforehand as part of my taper at my 1500 meter race pace. And I was like, there's no way I can do another 8 of those, or 7.5 before someone writes in. And the same in the marathon. I go out and did an easy tempo mile a week before my marathon at my marathon pace. And I'm supposed to do 26 miles at that pace. And running 1 mile at it, I was like, this is not sustainable.
No, don't say that. That's what I've got for the next 2 weeks.
No, that's what I'm telling you. It's going to feel like that. No. But it's not real. It's a psychological impact.
Don't give in to the paranoia, because I have been guilty of feeling exactly like that. And then I think a few days before I did my first marathon, I went out for a run and did a kilometre. And I think it was you, Andy was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I got scared. I just needed to prove I could run.
Back yourself and don't talk yourself out of it. This is the period that the prep time, or the bit, once you've done all the hard work, is actually the time you might make the worst mistakes, because you feel like, I need to be doing more. I need to do something new that I've never done before. Yeah. Oh, maybe now's the time to try and eat this thing or try these new shoes. Don't mess about. And don't talk yourself out of it. Just take a step back, read a book, listen to some amazing podcasts like the Running Channel podcast.
Obviously. Yeah. The thing that you can do as well that might be new is, like, if you are starting to get those little wobbles, like, try practicing your mindset. Like, it's a great time to go, okay, visualization. Can I sit down and imagine myself doing well, or like it going well and getting through it? Like, that's, you've got more time back in those last couple of weeks, so use it. And best of luck, Dane. Hopefully see you out on the course.
Sarah, before we go, have you got a favour to ask?
I have got a favour to ask. So we're obviously in marathon season now, a lot of people are taking it on, and so I would love to hear how it's going for you and how it's gone. Like, if you are taking on a marathon race, or any race actually, to be honest, email in podcast@therunningchannel.com, and I would love to do a few shout outs over the next couple of weeks of people who have taken on incredible races.
And Andy, give us that address again.
15 Bateman Street, Soho in London.
And well go done. To therunningchannel.com to find out when it's open and what we'll be doing. And we will see you there.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.